Hello, and we're back on 95.9 WATD, and we're with Michelle from Blue Saris Consulting, and want to introduce our next guest with us tonight, Dr. Justin Norden, who is a partner at GSR Ventures, where he focuses on early stage investments in digital health, AI, ML, in healthcare, and enterprise technology. Justin received his MD from Stanford University School of Medicine, where he served as a student body president, and MBA from the Stanford Graduate School of Business, where he served as president of the Healthcare Club. Also, Justin is a professional athlete for the San Jose Spiders, Ultimate Frisbee, holding the team all-time records for assists and completions. He is a three-time world champion, one-time professional champion, and a former Team USA captain under 24, and D1 University national champion. Michelle, please help me welcome Dr. Justin Norden. Hello, Dr. Norden.
Dr. Norden, we're here to talk about healthcare and digital health and AI, but we're going to have to take a left turn and talk a little bit about this Ultimate Frisbee. How did you get into that?
Hello, Michelle and Joe, thanks so much for having me on your show here. Ultimate Frisbee was on accident. You know, I grew up playing almost every sport imaginable, and then eventually said, hey, this is a bunch of fun. Get to run around, have fantastic sportsmanship, and, you know, ultimately kept doubling down until made it to the world championships. And so, you know, eventually, you know, had to move on and focus on other things, focus on, you know, medicine, focus on artificial intelligence and building startups in that area. But it's been a fantastic thing to get to play for years and years.
Well, thanks for that background. I know Joe has some great questions for you today for you on artificial intelligence and machine learning, and we'll explain to our audience what both of those are as well, but varied background. So thanks for giving us the background there, Joe.
Yeah, what an arm. Hey, Dr. Norden, I read an article you wrote in the New England Journal of Medicine about AI and machine learning. The title was What AI in Healthcare Can Learn from the Long Road to Autonomous Vehicles. Please explain how the ability to use AI in the automotive industry will be useful and successful in the healthcare industry under AI categories such as rule-based systems, supervised learning, unsupervised learning, and reinforcement learning.
Well, perfect. This is a topic I absolutely love. And, you know, please correct me, Michelle or Joe, if you find another physician, but I think I'm probably one of the only physicians who've worked both in healthcare and the autonomous vehicle industry. So just for a little bit more context, actually, the second startup I ended up founding was a company called Trustworthy AI. And we were working on algorithmic safety and trust. And we had tested medical devices to prove how and when these devices would fail. But we actually also ended up finding traction in the autonomous vehicle space. And how could we prove when and how an autonomous vehicle would fail in simulation and see things like this? Ultimately, that's the market that ended up we finding more traction in, and ultimately sold that company to Waymo a few years ago now, the Google self-driving car company, probably the leader in the space. And so as someone who's really sat on both sides from a deep technical AI perspective in the autonomous vehicle world, and then, you know, doing my day job now at GSR Ventures, where we're trying to bring in AI technologies into healthcare in a way that makes the most sense, best for patients, physicians, and everyone around the table, you know, thought to put this article together where what are the lessons we really can learn from maybe the cutting edge, people would argue, in the autonomous vehicle space with AI into healthcare. And so absolutely going through those different categories such as rule-based systems, supervised learning, unsupervised learning, and reinforcement learning, as you mentioned.
So one of the things that I think is interesting about AI and machine learning, and maybe for our listeners to understand, this is truly computers essentially learning from the experience that they have in the same way that you see those autonomous vehicles. Not surprising that you were able to adapt the same technology into a healthcare space or continue to bridge between those two verticals of business. When we think about this as community members, you know, AI now is going to be learning, you know, the road, or from a healthcare perspective, going to be learning about you. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, what does that, you know, how does that technically work? Deep language processing, computer vision, the deep learning, how can we equate that to sort of some of the things that we do on a daily basis? What are those differences that it's going to make?
Absolutely. And so, you know, one of the ways, and you know, as people have talked about AI in healthcare, Yeah, maybe starting about a decade ago, and it's obviously that conversation has changed significantly in the recent years with COVID and adoption of technology in new ways. But one of the ways I break it down in the article, and I think is useful to break it down, is, you know, the first step of where, you know, AI can come in and play in the hospital setting are very simple things. These are the simple things, your rule-based processes, things that happen in the EMR, where, you know, AI almost seems like a too complicated term, but it starts with something simple as, okay, your lab values are too high or too low. When we have this set of lab values, we know, you know, someone qualify potentially for kind of different sepsis criteria, things like this. And, you know, this was the start. And, you know, these things have been around. They're simple. They're easy to understand. We know how they're implemented. And those are systems we have today in place in healthcare. As over the years, we've started to implement more and more advanced systems that get progressively harder to understand, but can start with that simple framework of how do we take clear data where we know kind of the outcomes for what happens from that data, and then how do we apply those rules in the hospital setting? So we're starting, as you mentioned, to get things that are more complicated, like computer vision systems, you know, where we have AI in the background looking at radiology images to, you know, help people with stroke diagnoses or help people with other potential urgent things where, you know, having an AI read something quickly can actually get someone the right treatment a little bit faster. But, you know, these things are slow and these things are coming in different ways. You know, one of the big points I make in the article is that we really should be keeping humans in the loop as much as possible, meaning AI should augment care and not take people away completely, which I know is something that scared many, many people with these ideas.
Right. I just, Joe, if you'll permit me, I have a question, a follow-up sure. question to that. So the idea of evidence-based medicine, which is part of what you are referencing in terms of, hey, this lab value is here, and so therefore you're at risk or you need to do right. That's in healthcare today. And when we think about machine learning and AI, I think about the predictive value of that. The fact that you have, you know, about lab value at this amount, the computer, the systems will be able to predict whether or not you are more likely to become septic or more likely to become, you know, more at risk for chronic disease or more at risk for other types of diseases that could have major effects on your everyday life. So if those things are predicting and therefore in the machine learning space, making decisions around and ultimately where we think this was going is making decisions around what would we do to treat this patient, knowing that given their 4 or 5 or 10 or 20 different points of data becomes a predictor for a future disease. My question to you is, what do you think about the implications of that from, and this is a kind of a curveball for you, so I apologize ahead of time. What do you think about the implications of that? Some discussion about whether or not, you know, because there is some actual decision-making there from the system that they actually should be licensed like a physician and should have malpractice insurance like a physician in time. So we're in new territory here.
Absolutely. And no, not at all a curveball question. I think this is a question on top of everyone's mind. How are we going to use these tools? Who is responsible for these tools? And when something goes wrong, you know, who's liable? And, you know, going back to your point on evidence-based medicine, I think that's a perfect place to start, you know, because that, you know, as you train as a physician, okay, I understand these guidelines. There were large, hopefully well-run clinical trials that developed these guidelines that allowed us to find, okay, these are certain predictive markers or ideas. And we did this in, you know, potentially large randomized controlled trials, and then we implement those. And we say, we know now that, you know, blood pressure is an early predictor of, you know, adverse cardiovascular events. And so we need to treat this. And so in some sense, you can use that same framework to think about evidence-based medicine to these new AI tools. these AI tools are just learning potentially from slightly different data sources, from maybe real world data that we see in electronic medical record or other trials or other genomic information that we can piece together to ultimately make the same goal. Based on these other factors, sometimes we know exactly what they are depending on the AI algorithm you're using. Sometimes they're a little bit more opaque, which we can talk about later. But then ultimately, we're trying to do the same thing with these AI tools and say, given what we know about you from the information that we have, these are some things we might be worried about and we might want to intervene in a different way. And so there's a few different ways people are implementing these systems. You know, one way is people are trying to go all the way to a diagnosis purely from an AI system. And people are trying this in a few ways. And the other way people are doing it is people are trying to say, hey, we know these things. Let me flag this for you, whether it's a physician or someone else on the care team. And I'm more worried about patient A than patient B. So maybe you should follow up with patient A. And yeah, in those cases, you know, the physician, the care team is still responsible in all the same ways as before. We're just using data to help prioritize, surface, understand a little bit better. And so, and to me, that's, I think, where actually we should prioritize AI within healthcare, is keeping those clinical teams in the loop and just using the AI in the background to kind of help prioritize, surface things that might have been missed otherwise.
In the article I read in the New England Journal of Medicine, AI specifically was being used in the field of radiology, and it focused on the problem of trying to reduce the time to initiate interventional care for a stroke by detecting large vessels on CT scans. How is this helping to speed up the treatment of care, and what are hospitals seeing for outcomes?
Absolutely. So this is in particular talking about some of the work. VizAI is one of the companies that has done this. And, you know, they implemented AI into the clinical workflow. You know, could they flag earlier that there's a potential stroke, a potential issue on a CT scan, and kind of intervene earlier, you know, getting someone potentially to a cath lab to help improve their care? And, you know, they proved through prospective clinical trials that people had reduced time in patients who were able to use their system to receive treatment, and ultimately better outcomes. And so, you know, this to me is a perfect example of, you know, AI being able to actually be implemented at a number of hospital systems across the country and actually kind of change outcomes for those patients. You know, this is a continued area. I'm sure they're going to continue to publish research as it goes forward to make sure, are we still improving these outcomes? Are we getting the right things that we want? But in my mind, I think this is a, you know, gold standard example for how to get AI implemented within the healthcare setting.
Yeah, gold standard is absolutely right. I mean, the telestroke example, the sepsis example that you're referencing, these are life-saving, you know, treatments or methods to be able to get to those treatments. And I think what even our listeners need to understand is that the more quickly that you can get to treatment, in particular with telestroke, that represents life, that represents quality of life, changes in your physicality, et cetera. So the more quickly that someone can be identified as a stroke patient and then get treatment, it has a major effect, not only on their quality of life post-stroke, but obviously it contributes to the total cost of healthcare in our community. So these are really important. And I certainly, sepsis may not be as well known to individual listeners, but it's another area in healthcare where we're constantly looking for ways to identify patients who are at risk for sepsis, because it is such a deadly infection that can change the life of a patient, obviously, particularly in the ICU or in any kind of hospital setting. So
that's such a good point.
Examples. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great point. And that's a great way to explain how important this is. Now, moving to the next category is unsupervised learning systems and the techniques used to produce synthetic data to mimic real world data. I think the example I read that they're using in healthcare is called a digital twin for researching more personalized cardiac care. You care to explain about this?
Sure. So, you know, as we think about some of the big categories in machine learning and AI, this first category, supervised learning first, which is maybe easier to understand, is, you know, we have a set of patients, we have data, we know what the outcomes are. You know, we know these patients have stroke. Let's build the algorithm to predict this. You know, what we can start to do with unsupervised learning is, you know, how do we use algorithms to identify patterns in data without predetermined known outcomes? How do we make kind of new discoveries from the data on things we might not have previously known? And so, you know, one example where we've done this a lot previously in healthcare is, you know, in genomics. You know, we've said, hey, we don't know how, you know, all of these breast cancer patients are going to progress based on their disease. Can we use unsupervised learning techniques to say, here's 10 different groups of breast cancer subtypes that we, you know, previously didn't know? And we know now that they'll respond to treatments in different ways. With regards to what you're talking about and kind of using digital twins and other areas in cardiology or clinical trials, this is a way where, you know, we can say, given what we know about, given what we know about the cardiac system, can we test things in digital twins, which are basically digital versions where we can test different ways the body might respond to a certain drug, to a certain treatment, to then learn new things about how we could design new treatments is how this is being done.
Excellent. Really interesting. Really interesting.
That is. What about the reimbursement aspect of using AI technology? What is NTAP? Please explain.
You're asking all the hard questions now. So this is an area that, you know, has progressed significantly over the past few years where, you know, again, to bring it back to VizAI, they have gotten reimbursement specialized codes for the use of AI-assisted stroke care, where, you know, hospitals based on, you know, using their system are able to get paid for the better care that they're able to deliver. I wish it was this easy for every company in the AI healthcare space. You know, this is a key challenge. If I have better, you know, are there great sepsis reimbursement CPT codes? Not really. Are there great other areas if I'm doing a wearable at home to predict someone's risk of coming in for heart failure? Are we paying for that? Not really. And so today, a lot of the AI companies, you know, are trying to find toeholds and traction in value-based arrangements, where they can, you know, work with the health system or partner to say, hey, look, we're going to, you know, save costs and we're going to prioritize your highest risk patients and you're ultimately going to see value rather than in the traditional fee-for-service world. And so, you know, today, this is where most of kind of AI is being reimbursed and startups are able to work within the system. You know, I'm hoping we'll see more traditional reimbursement as well, but it's a key challenge for companies in this space.
And we're talking about Medicare and Medicaid reimbursement. So that's very impressive. Wow, what a huge step that is for AI.
Yeah. No, VizAI was the first company to do this a few years ago. So we're moving in the right direction.
So Dr. Norden, what have we learned from AI and autonomous vehicles, level 4 and 5, respectively? What are we learning?
Absolutely. So this framework, again, from the autonomous vehicle industry, and I'll start from the beginning in case not everyone's familiar, but they call it 5 levels of automation for how a car might drive itself. And so we start at the beginning. You know, one, you know, many of you, if you're driving right now, your car will have certain autonomy features like, you know, automatic braking, where if it detects the car in front of you, you know, can we brake to potentially avoid a collision? The car will do this automatically without kind of any user input. You know, that starts to be kind of towards level one. Level two, you know, some of you, if anyone's driving a Tesla or a car with kind of active lane assist, active cruise control, where a car will actually just for you, you know, slow up, speed down, or even keep in someone's lane to kind of help with those features. But the key thing is the driver is still ultimately responsible for the control of the vehicle. Those are kind of level one and two features. As we go to kind of level 4 and level 5, this is where the car is truly responsible in a situation completely for the actions and what's happening. These are the companies like Waymo and Cruise that are trying to only build cars with these level of features, where the car is completely responsible for the actions. And so I think this is a useful framework for how we think about AI in the medical arena, because if you think about these level 4 or 5 features, these are features where we're saying, we want the clinician, everyone else, completely out of the loop. The AI is going to do absolutely everything. Whereas on the other end of the spectrum, level 1 or level 2, The AI could be helping. It could be prioritizing which patients are seen first. It could be flagging patients who, you know, might have something concerned, might be at risk for sepsis, might be at risk for stroke or something else. But then letting the doctor ultimately still be responsible, still make the decisions, but just use that additional guidance or kind of guardrails for support. And so the key point actually I make in this article is that while there's a big reason to completely remove a driver from the situation in the autonomous vehicle industry, I kind of argue the opposite. Actually, there's key benefits to keeping physicians and other clinicians in the loop dealing with care, because actually that's important for a therapeutic alliance. And there's no big payoff. You completely remove a physician from the loop. It's not like care fundamentally changes in this new way. And so I really think AI should be focused in healthcare on kind of the level 1, 2, 3 of autonomy and not level 4, level 5.
Yeah, I love the way the article ended. I didn't expect it to end like that. And you did a great job of summing that up.
Yeah, I completely agree that healthcare, you know, has really been changing and using all these new technologies. You know, we're seeing healthcare being redefined by technologies and how to think about data, how we deliver care, and using these, you know, digital endpoints and AI and machine learning to really start to, as you point out, get to genomics, et cetera, and utilizing some of this research so we can understand how to better attack and treat disease over time.
We're talking with Dr. Justin Norton from GSR Ventures. Thank you for your time tonight. Our show's goal is always to bring our listeners educated and established doctors, nurses, and digital investors in to speak with us. We want to provide our listeners the latest information in healthcare, not only locally, but on a national level. If you're interested in learning more about BlueCeres in the world of digital health, you can find this interview and more on our website, blue-ceres.com. Thank you, Dr. Norton.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for being here. It was great to have you.
This is BlueCeres Telehealth Radio on WATD 95.9 FM.